Ben and Jerry's, as far as I know, have not yet reached the Rabbi. Okay. So we were talking about some halachas regarding to Stam Yerim, and the last thing that we mentioned, what is the halacha by Jews who are Mechali Shabbos b'Farhesia? We mentioned that there's precedent to declare that Jews who are Mechal Shabbos b'Farhesia have the Dino Ka'akov. They're considered like a non-Jews with regard to certain laws, like with regard to Bris Milah, with regard to Shechita, this we already mentioned. And we also mentioned that when it came to Stam Yenam, there the Rishonim don't talk about it, except for two Rishonim. We mentioned Rabbeinu Yonah, we mentioned the Rivash, but by and large, the Rishonim do not discuss this topic of a Jew who is Mechal Shabbos with regard to Stam Yenam. So the Rivash and Rabbeinu Yonah are Machmir. They say that just like in all the other cases, we say that such a Jew is Dino Kenochri. So to here, we'll say he's Dino Kenochri, and the wine is considered Stam Yenam. But as I mentioned to you, the most Rishonim don't discuss it. So the question is, how do you interpret this? What is the halacha? So if you look in the early poskim, for example, if you look in the Beis Yosef, so the Beis Yosef in Yoredeah, in Simen Kuf Yud Tes, discusses the general topic, but he does quote the Rivash. He quotes Rabbeinu Yonah, but he doesn't like discuss the whole thing. He doesn't say, well, it's missing from all the Rishonim. So he touches on it, and that's in the Beis Yosef. And then in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Mumar, the wine is considered Stam Yenam. But what's not clear in the Shulchan Aruch, when he says the Mumar, his wine is Stam Yenam, it's not clear whether the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a Mumar for Avodah Zarah or a Mumar for Chil Shabbos. He doesn't say. So it's it's still an open question. It's not totally clear. The Shach, in his Nekuda Sakesef, quotes Rabbeinu Yonah, and he's also Machmir in the Nekuda Sakesef. But in his main Mefaresh, in the Shach, he doesn't mention it. So poskim are view this as just a difficult sugya. And in the end of the day, what you have is a big split. There are a number of poskim. I'll give you a list of them. For example, the Darkei Tshuva in Yoredeah, Simen Kuf Chof Dalet, brings down many poskim who are machmir. Because the Darkei Tshuva brings down many poskim who are machmir. They say, in the end, it looks like the Shulchan Aruch is machmir, it looks like the Shach is machmir, and therefore we should be machmir. He does quote some poskim at Mekel, but on the whole, the Darkei Tshuva seems to be machmir. So who's the Mekel? Rav Moshe Feinstein. Sort of. Not entirely. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, this is in Igros Moshe Orach Chaim, Chelek Hei, Simen Lamed Zayin, Os Ches. Okay, again, Orach Chaim, Chelek Hei, Simen Lamed Zayin, Os Ches. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, it seems to him that really the halacha is that Mumar Yisrael, the Chal Shabbos B'Farhesia, really with regard to Stam Yenam, is not Dino Ki'akom. He says, Me'ikir the Dina, it's really not so. And the reason that he says so is because he says, most Rishonim don't talk about it. And he says that you can infer from their silence that they felt there was no problem. It's a big chiddush, but that's his position. But nonetheless, just to be clear, in the end of the day, Rav Moshe Feinstein is Machmir. Why? He says, it seems to him that while from Alpi Halacha, from halachic reasons, one should not view the wine as Stam Yenam, but the Minog Yisrael is to be Machmir. That's how he says it. He says, the Minog Yisrael is to be Machmir. So when he did Minog Yisrael, he says, we should be Machmir in such wine, but again, it sounds like a Chumrah rather than the real Din. I once spoke to Rav Lichtenstein about this topic, and he quoted to me a number of poskim, including the Tzitz Eliezer and some others, that said, who is considered, first of all, a Mumar L'Chal Shabbos B'Farhesia? I mean, we saw that if one truly is a mumah l'chal Shabbos b'farhesya, so there's a big debate in poskim. But who gets into that category? Who's zocher for that category? So there are poskim who say that it's a tough category to get into. Because it could be that if you show just some kavod hatorah, then you're no longer considered a mumah l'chal Shabbos b'farhesya, even though you drive around on Shabbos, even though this guy turns on lights and everything. But if there was like a chief rabbi visiting him for Shabbos, he wouldn't turn on the lights, you know, and he wouldn't drive the car right in front of the chief rabbi. If this Jew, you know, would show some respect for Torah, then we would not consider him, we would not deem him a mumah l'chal Shabbos b'farhesya. It's true. Listen, there are some Jews who couldn't care. They're lahachis and they don't care, and maybe, you know, they've had a bad experience. I don't know. Whatever it is, they will do it even b'farhesya. But my sense is that the by and large, most people in such instances would be respectful, and therefore there's room to say that maybe they wouldn't even be considered a mumah l'chal Shabbos b'farhesya. Yeah.
Why is that considered showing respect for Torah? Shouldn't that be showing respect for the person? You know,
well, the person represents.
I'm not going to drive right in front of you
because
it's
offensive. Well, because
it's offensive to you. But I would completely. I don't care one bit about this.
Right, but they recognize that this person represents Torah.
They represent. It's not the covenant of Rios.
Yeah. It seems so. That's what it seems so. Because of this person's connection with Torah, so they,
right.
You know, they're doing it. In any event, there's such a debt. There is such a debt. Now, the question is, are there some other reasons to be makel? Can we find some reason to allow it? Let's say it's a shasat chak. You know, what can we do? So I already gave you one reason. That maybe, number one, these people, by and large, don't fit into the category of mumah l'chal Shabbos b'farhesya, because they have some respect. A second reason could be something that's called an omer mutter. An omer mutter, or a tinuk shenishba, means that they think it's fine. In other words, it's not that they're mumar. Mumar implies somebody who's rebellious. But let's say the person has no clue. They simply don't understand. Or maybe, as some posts can even indicate, like the Binyan Sion and the Chazanish, they say that let's say a person is brought up in a society where the trend in the general society is not to be frum. Now, you take most Jews, unfortunately, in terms of the numbers, most Jews are unfortunately not shomer Torah mitzvos. So, again, it depends on what community you maybe you're brought up in and what society you're brought up in. But if you're brought up in an area, you know, where the tendency is not to be frum, so perhaps, again, there's room to say this person's not a rebellious Jew. He's doing what everyone's doing. That's not called being rebellious. So to call him a mumar might be too much.
So conservatives would be up in this category?
It could be. It could be. If they're brought up that way and they don't know any better, so they would be like a shogeg, you know, or a omer mutter. They would just think that...
I feel like they know. They know Orthodox Jews aren't driving across the Shema, but they still do it.
Right, but in their own mind, they wouldn't say, like, if someone would stop them on the street and say, listen, you know, do you think that you're going against the Torah? So would they say, yes, but we don't care? Or would they say, no, the Torah's been updated and modernized and, you know, and we're not doing anything wrong, you know? So this concept is brought down by the Binyan Sion in Simon Chaf Gimel. I think I may have mentioned before, but just to reiterate who the Binyan Sion was. The Binyan Sion was Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. He was the Rebbe of Rav Shimshon Feller Hirsch. He wrote a number of very interesting svarim. One of them is the Binyan Sion. It's a Sheilos V'Tshuvos. Would anyone mind if I shut the heater, or do I get on? Leave it on? So he wrote the Binyan Sion. It's a Sheilos V'Tshuvos. He wrote the Aruch Laner, which is a commentary on the Gemara. And he also wrote the Bikurei Yaakov, which is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So he was a very prominent posek from Germany, and he said this, he took this approach. Similarly, the Chazon Ish took this approach. The Chazon Ish, you can find it in Yoredeya, Simen Aleph. Okay, excuse me, Yoredeya Chelek Aleph, Simen Vav. Yoredeya Chelek Aleph, Simen Vav. And also in Evan Ezra, Simen Yud Ches, Siv Vav. And there were other poskim also took this approach, that there's grounds to say Omer Mutter. Not everyone agrees. I want to mention, not everyone agrees with this, but there is this. There is some poskim who are willing to take such an approach. Also, just to throw in, it's sort of hard just to begin with misvara to apply staminim to a Jew, right? Why? Because if you say the din of staminim was because of chasnus, because of intermarriage, he's a Jew. And if you say the reason is because of avodah zara, no one is over to avodah zara today, unless again they went to the Far East. But on the whole, by and large, these people are not over the avodah zara. So again, there's a lot of room to be made. So just to point out, in the end, Rav Moshe Feinstein said the minhag is to be machmir, and Rav Avad Yosef said you should be machmir. The Tzitzel Eliezer in the end said you should be machmir. But as I mentioned, the Binyan Sion and the Chazon Ish and the Mishnah Halachos and others were willing to be makel. So the bottom line is, it's a major machlokas haposkim. So if you're sitting at a table in a restaurant with lots of family and guests, or you have people over at your home, and some of the people there are not from, or you have a waiter who's not from, and when we say not from, the Chal Shabbos before Hesya. So do you apply the appellation of a mumma l'chal Shabbos b'far hesed to them with regard to the wine? So the din is, it would seem, I asked Rav Lichtenstein on this, how should we conduct ourselves? He said that l'chatchila we should be careful, but he said in the Shas HaTchak, he said he personally, b'Shas HaTchak, if it would end up embarrassing somebody, he would be mekel. He'd be somech l'chal.
How do you know that the waiter's l'chal Shabbos b'far hesed is that where you keep
up? Like I said, it's hard to know. That's an added level of suffix. I think I mentioned last week the case my father, right? Right? It turned out he was a Shomer Shabbos guy. Maybe it was totally. I don't know. But it turned out he was certainly not a Machal Shabbos belt.
Do you know whether you should make
an
assumption to not your restaurant?
You should be careful. Try to be careful. Yeah, that's the thing. But as I said, it's like an added suffix. I think in the beginning is a drabanan. But the issue to begin with, Samyanim is drabanan. Is machlok saposkim even in the worst case scenario? And now it's a suffix on top of that. There's a lot. There's room to be makel. Okay, but still, I'm saying l'chatchila we should be careful. I think that if you're at a restaurant, you order wine, order the bottle closed, unless it's all from waiters. Otherwise, order the bottle closed and you open it up yourself. Or if they want to pour, if you want a glass of wine, ask them. Would they mind terribly opening up a new bottle? If they don't want to do it, then what are you going to do? But if you can. You want to open up a new bottle of wine, and you open it up and you pour the glass. That's the best thing. Also a good question. At least some ten. What is the purpose of having 10? Yeah.
Remember correctly, I think I learned recently that the Velvet Sky was talking about disabilities people should borrow against somebody. Who is a Machal Shabbos? I think you mentioned that even if somebody knows he's doing something wrong, he's doing it wrong simply because he can't control himself, not because he doesn't believe in it, but simply because he can't control his urges.
Like the Teavon, he's a Mumma the Teavon, not the
Hachas. Right, right. So that's not considered.
Also, he's also willing.
Same thing over here, also.
Okay, it could be. I mean, there's certainly grounds. Cool. That's a good chiluk. That is an important chiluk. Okay. One way to solve the whole problem is to simply order Yain Mavushal. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Tes Amubeis, teaches us the following din, that we normally assume that there should be no Isser of Stam Yainam by Yain Mavushal, by cooked wine. Why is that? Because cooked wine is considered subpar. It doesn't taste as good. People who are wine connoisseurs, they can spot it. They could pick it right out. Okay, it's been cooked, it's been destroyed. So, the Gemara says, therefore, if the wine is cooked, and then a non-Jew handles it, we're going to assume there's no gzeira stam yena, because why would he use it before Yayin Nesach, they were very makbid. They had high standards, right? They would only use high level wine. Similarly, if you would say if the reason was for intermarriage, why would I say that only, you know, good wine, fine wine would be subject to intermarriage? Why? Huh? Maybe they drink less. Also, it's not as considered as because if you're drinking bad wine together, it's not conducive, you know. But so the point is that, you know, if it's mavusha, meaning it's somewhat ruined, if it's not high, it's not a high quality, so then we don't have to worry about stamina. I remember once, a number of years back, we had a girl who was in the process of becoming a giyores over at our home, and we had kiddush, and we made sure our wine was yayin mevushal, and the wine was passed. And I realized we had to be careful, and it was just very interesting that when the wine got to her, she refused. She said, "I can't touch it. I'm not allowed." So I said, "But it's mevushal." She goes, "Nonetheless," she says, she's instructed not to go near the wine. She doesn't go near the wine. So I said, "But it's mevushal. It's a Gemara, you know." No. So, but it does help. Okay, even, you know, even if she did move around the wine, it would have been okay. Now this psak is not just in the Gemara. It's found in the Rambam, in Hilchos Machalos Asuros Perek Yud Aleph. It's found in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kaf Yud Ches in Yeridaya. That we are mekel when the yain is really considered yain mevushal. So so certainly if you'd order yain mevushal at a restaurant or you had it, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about all these problems. The question is, what is considered yain mevushal? How do you categorize yain mevushal? So there's a debate in Rishonim. If you want to look for a little summary of this, it's found in the Ran and Avodah Zarah. Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. The Ran in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, quotes the various Rishonim. He first quotes the Ravid that it's the Ran in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. So he says that the Ravid says, what's the shear? The shear is reticha. Well, how would you define reticha?
Boiling.
Literally means boiling. So it could be that's what it means, or it could just mean very hot. But the word that's used by the Ravid is reticha. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch paskins like this Ravid. That's the phrase that he uses. It's in Yoredeya Siman Kuf Chaf Gimel Sif Gimel Kuf Chaf Gimel Gimel. Now, not everyone agrees with this Ravid. The Rambam says, no, you don't need reticha. At least what it sounds like. He says, all you need is chom, that's heat, shemitma'et ha-kamut, which means a heat that will cause evaporation of the wine. No. Well, it'll evaporate. No. First of all, I mean, if you heat something up, so it'll evaporate. Just if you boil it, it'll evaporate very quickly. But he says that it's enough that just to make it a heat that will cause it to evaporate. So just one. So the Ran says, someone said over here, the Ran says, no, it's the same shita. He quotes a third opinion that it could be that the din is reticha shemimayet hakamut. And that very well could be what the Rambam really meant. So it's not really super clear how to paskin. But if you do look in the Shulchan Aruch only mentions reticha. And that'll have very important implications later on. Yeah.
Alcohol boils the water temperature in the water. So when Rambam is referring to that, the kamut, does he mean the concentration of alcohol? Does he mean the general?
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
Right. The whole, you know, so if you draw a line,
so
you know, in the bottle.
So do you need, like, any heat to speed it up?
It sounds like a heat, you know, it sounds like the trigger has to be the heat. That's what it sounds like from the Rambam.
When you said that the Ran believes that the Rambam and Ravid are the same opinion, what do you... When you said that the Rambam believes the Rambam and the
He may believe that the Rambam holds this way. It's not clear.
Both
reticha shemimayet hakamot. Now, while if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, as I said, the Shulchan Aruch does not mention this Reticha Shemamaya Takamara. Just mentions Reticha. But if you look in the Ber Heitev says, no, the Shulchan Aruch really does mean that you need Reticha Shemamaya Takamot. And again, we'll soon see this has important implications. This man has it. Okay. The Ber Heitev says the Shulchan Aruch also requires a Reticha Shemamaya Takamot. Boiling that would make a cause evaporation. Okay, so lemaisa. Okay, we've heard all these terms thrown around. What is the heat that we're machmir for? How much? What heat do you have to expose the wine to? So Moshe Feinstein says as follows. He says in Fahrenheit. I'll convert it to Celsius in a second. He says in Fahrenheit. He says at least 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Ideally 175. Okay. He says 165, preferably 175 and up. In centigrade, that's like 79 is the minimum. Actually, 73 is the minimum about, to 79. 73 to 79, something like that. So that's where Moshe Feinstein. There's a Rebbe in... He lived basically in the early 1900s, early to mid-1900s. His name was the Tzelem HaRebbe. Did you guys ever hear of the Tzelem HaRebbe? Who here heard of the Tzelem HaRebbe?
The one that made the matzahs? Tzelem
HaMatzahs. No one else here heard of the Tzelem HaRebbe, though? That means you have not been reading the grape juice bottles carefully. Who here knows what Kedem grape juice bottles look like? Who here has tasted Kedem grape juice? Who here has held a Kedem grape juice bottle in their hand? Okay. So, do me a favor. The next time you pick up a Kedem grape juice bottle, look at it. Okay? Read the labeling. They have two runs. Some of the runs that they have are Dafka Alpi the Tzelem HaRebbe. Okay? They cook it according to the rule of the Tzelem HaRebbe. The Tzelem HaRebbe, just to let you know, his name is Rav Levi Yitzchak Greenwald. He was born in 1893, and he died in 1980. Again, Rav Levi Yitzchak Greenwald. And basically, he was an American kashrus pioneer, and it was because of him, he was a person who seriously advocated for grape juice on Shabbos for Kiddush. If not for him, we may not have enjoyed grape juice. He was pushing. You know why he was pushing for it? What happened in the United States in the early 1900s?
Prohibition.
So, does anyone know what prohibition is? Does anyone not know what prohibition is? Okay. Okay. So, it's an issue. So he advocated for grape juice for Kiddush, and he made it famous. He made grape juice in Kiddush. Like America and apple pie. Okay, now the only thing is that Tzelem HaRebbe was very machmir about the about Bishul. He said, "What is it? It has to be 190 degrees Fahrenheit, which is like 87 degrees centigrade, 87.7, something like that." It's very odd. That's much closer to actual Reticha. So the main afkamina between the Moshe Feinstein and the Tzelem. The nafkamina is for pasteurization. Okay, many wines, not all, but many wines undergo pasteurization. In Hebrew, it's known as a pistur, or you'll see yayin mefustar. And pasteurization typically is about 158 degrees Fahrenheit to 180 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about the range, 158 to 180. Which again, it's centigrade, is like 70 to 82. About. So according to Moshe Feinstein, pasteurization will by and large hit the correct point and you're okay. So according to Moshe Feinstein, pasteurized wine should be fine. Pasteurized grape juice should be fine. You're not going to worry about staminum. But according to Tzelem HaRebbe, it's not going to help out. And it affected me deeply, this question, on some level. When I was growing up, there was a grape soda known as Welch's grape soda, still probably around, maybe? Huh? So I happen to remember, I have a distinct memory being in the bowling alley with my brother and father. I was like 7 or 8 years old, and we were playing some games bowling, and I wanted something to drink, so I went over to the candy machines and the soda machines, and I wanted the grape soda. Looked really, really good. So I don't remember having seen it before. So my father, there was a good reason we didn't see it before. So my father told me then and there, no, it's not kosher. I said, what could possibly be wrong with the grape soda? So my father introduced me to the idea. That's where I learned about Samenim, in the bowling alley. The interesting question would be, was it mefustar, was it pasteurized or not? But the thing is, the probability is that it was pasteurized after the fact. In other words, if it was pasteurized on Jewish premises and then given to non-Jews, that's one thing. Then we could be makel. But the Welch's soda was, Welch's grape juice and grape soda first came in contact with non-Jews, right, which made it stamianum, and then it was pasteurized. So it's too late. You can't, once it's stamianum, you can't convert it. That's it. Stamianum. So,
a few years ago, they came out with kosher Welch's.
There was. I do remember that also. I remember thinking, only. I remember thinking, like, if only they'd done this earlier. Yeah. I remember hearing about that. So the only thing is, there are some poskim, like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zatzal, who was very concerned about the pasteurization process today, and relying on it to call it Yain Mevushal. Why? So first of all, he suggests, and this is based on a rush in Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis, Simin Yud Beis. The rush there seems to say that, you know why Yain Mevushal worked, and it removed the problem of Stam Yainam? So the Rosh says in Avodah Zarah, Beis Yud Beis, he says, well, it's because it makes it Loshchiach. In other words, it was very unusual to have cooked wine because it destroyed the wine. So Loshchiach lo gozu beiravon. That's how the Rosh formulates it. Today, is it odd to have pasteurization? Milsa Loshchiach means, right, uncommon things. Typically, Chazal did not pass legislation in uncommon cases. But pasteurization today is very common. So it could be, according to the Rosh, that it should be also. Number two, very often when they do pasteurization today, they don't do it in an open area. They do it inside pipes, closed pipes, which means what's not happening? Huh? But there's no evaporation. It's all inside a closed pipe. So if you hold like the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, you're okay. Because the Shulchan Aruch just says reticha. But if you hold like the Be'er Heitev's reading of the Shulchan Aruch, that you need reticha, shememai takamut, then you're going to be stuck. Now, I know for a fact that the OU is extra careful about this. The OU, when they use pasteurization as call it Yayim Mevushal, it's only in cases where they had opened up, they created valves to allow for some of the evaporation. One final note. The pasteurization process today has been perfected so that it doesn't harm the wine, or certainly not too badly. What do they do? It's called cold pasteurization. Cold pasteurization is this really interesting way of bringing up a liquid to the proper heat of pasteurization, killing the germs, but it's only done for a moment. It's heated up for one moment and then drop back down. So like that's it, second or so. And then it's cooled off. And apparently when it's done in that fashion, it's the wine is either not harmed or barely harmed. And there are today, I'm sure if you're at all read about wines, there are pasteurized wines, kosher pasteurized wines, that win like medals, international medals, because you can't have like a competition about for bad wine, right? It's ridiculous. But they have had competitions for, you know, and the pasteurized wine is winning. So obviously it tastes good.
For
only kosher wine.
Yeah. Communion? Not exclusively, but they start using it. Would that be a problem? Because
don't tell me they're calling it kiddish now, also.
No, but they're using it for
right. If they're actually using it for Yayin Nesa, I mean, libations, then it becomes a Yayin Nesa. That which is an interesting question. Well, again, Stam Yena means where we don't know what they did with it. But here they specifically did use it for seemingly a
so
server. Which is because they dropped their.
Right, they no longer care
right.
About it.
Right, I don't know if that's. That, you know, Chazal, when they made the Xer, you know, they didn't take into a fact that people would just lower their Avodazar standards.
They're
slackers. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so what I would like to discuss now is what is the story with whiskey? How does this all impact on whiskey? Yeah.
The
sure.
Like the average waiter in the restaurant, would he say no, didn't he know for sure? Like he maybe twice. So he could do his
well, apparently, again, we said that. There isn't real Avodah Zarah today, right? And anyone who's a true self-respecting Avodah Zarah, you know, idolater, would know, like, not to use. If he really was a from idolater, he would know the halacha that he has to only use non-kosher. Right? I mean,
is that the halacha of idolaters?
Apparently. What the Gemara says. Right, the Gemara is teaching us the halachas of Avodah Zarah.
So, you would dip up Shlomo's arm and just drink Yayin of the Shul.
Did he actually drink Yayin Yom Kippur? You mean for Kiddush and things like that?
Yeah.
Right?
It was like the whole process is just like...
Well, he was against pasteurized. He was against using pasteurization as the head of the Yayin Yom Kippur.
So you can use it then?
No, you can... kosher wine. You know, if you buy wine that's kosher, you're okay. You just, the issue is, if you have Yayin that's pasteurized and the non-Jew handles it, when it's open, then what's the deal?
Ramosha was okay
with it. And I think, listen, if you want to ask me about the bottom line of pasteurized wine, many people are medical. But again, there are issues. It's not a simple, question.
But would grape juice have been used for what is
that? Probably not. It's not technically speaking, it's not. In other words, what the Gemara seems to say that the only wine that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah would use is wine that we consider to be royal nasech agabe mizbeach, like the best type of wine. So the Gemara says in Bava Basra that grape juice was certainly at least not lechatchila royal nasech agabe mizbeach. So it's not intoxicating. So it's unlikely that they would have done it, but nonetheless, the gzera is still on it because it can be converted into it. You know, in other words, so since there's a shem yayin, the din does apply. So grape juice is included in the gzera of stam yinim. Okay, now what's the story with whiskey? So first of all, The Shulchan Aruch discusses this. Is if you want to look it up, it's in Yordas and Mekuf Yudalad. The Shulchan Aruch discusses the fact that it was known in the 1500s and a little bit earlier that non-Jews would sometimes place additives into their drinks that were not wine, or grape derivatives. It was known that that's what they would do. It was very often that they would throw in if they had a special honey liquor. they might throw in some wine or some other stuff. So the Shulchan Aruch says you should check. Whenever you're drinking stuff, you know, beverages that come from non-Jews, just check and make sure that they didn't add anything. That's number one. Then the Shulchan Aruch says, this is also in Yodea Kuf Yudalet, the Shulchan Aruch says, when wine is cheaper than the alcoholic beverage, let's say wine is cheaper than whiskey, so then you have to be super careful. Maybe even it's usur, because then we're really concerned that they're going to add. Because it was very tempting for them to add the wine to increase the volume of what they were selling. And it worked for them. So again, if it was economically expedient, then you would have to be really concerned. So what happens today? Bizman Hazeh, are non-Jews adding, let's say, Stam Yenam wine to whiskey? The answer is, in some cases, yes. In some cases, they simply pour in a small percentage of wine. It doesn't seem that they're doing this for economic reasons, you know, to increase volume. But rather, it seems they're doing this for taste. They somehow feel that this helps with the taste and the feel of the wine. So the feel of the whiskey. So that's one issue. A second issue, Derech Agav, is they also sometimes add glycerin. Why would they throw in glycerin? What does glycerin do? Smoother. Okay, it makes it a little bit smoother. So certain companies amongst the whiskey makers are putting in wine and glycerin. Now, if you had to guess, would you say that these are the better whiskey companies or the lower tier ones? You don't find why the better companies that are doing this. Okay. So what are the better companies doing? Are they adding any wine? So as it turns out, there are different types of whiskey. There's a whiskey that's called bourbon. You ever hear bourbon?
Yeah.
Okay. Bourbon is considered the frum Jew's drink. Why? That's like for sure kosher. Huh?
It's straight corn. It's your corn.
Right, but let's say you're the better company. You don't add to your whiskey. You don't actually pour stuff in. But why would bourbon be fine? So, apparently, and this is a law, if you make bourbon, the barrels have to be brand new barrels. When you say that your whiskey is bourbon, you are telling the consumer, in essence, that you've made this whiskey in a freshly made barrel with no additives. Okay, that is the definition of bourbon. So that's considered, therefore, from Jews, like, for sure you're okay with that one. Now, other whiskeys, though, blended, you know, certainly blended ones and even single malts, they have certain barrels that were made from sherry casks, or the casks were used for other wines, and then, you know, first of all, because you need casks. Number two, somehow it affects the taste. We'll talk about that. But if that's the case, then what's the concern? So imagine the barrel was used for wine previously. What was the wine considered? Stam Yenam. Poured out, cleaned out, but the wine is still absorbed into the walls. And then you fill it up with whiskey and you let it soak there for a while. What's going to happen to the taste of the wine? It's absorbed into the whiskey. And there's a rule with regard to bittel. Right? We say that you can mevatel things b'shishim, right? Kimavatel is a b'shishim. But there's a rule. The rule is that whatever's inside a container is typically not considered shishim against its walls. Okay, that's the typical rule. That whatever is inside a container, a pot, a barrel, whatever it is, we don't assume that it has the ratio of 60 to 1 against the walls. One example, the Shulchan Aruch says if the walls were supremely thin, then we'll assume it does. But otherwise, we assume that whatever is absorbed into the walls is not going to be bottle b'shishim because it's not enough. We're going to get to that also. But I'm saying even you get rid of all that, at this stage, the point is you don't even have the shishim. That's it's even worse than we thought. So, just to give you some names, it's like McKellen. You guys are familiar with McKellen whiskey, McKellen Scotch. So they boast that all their Scotch is aged in sherry casks. Okay, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Glenmorangie. Morangie, or it's a hard G or soft G?
No, that's right.
It's a machlokas. Huh? What is it? Okay. In any event, apparently they have a chiluk. They say the 18-year-old whiskey sometimes is in sherry. The 10-year-old ones are dafka in bourbon casks. Okay, so it's like a machlokas. But just to realize it's a bit of an issue. Which ones, you know what a single malt is versus a blended whiskey? Okay, so single malt means that they didn't blend it. Okay, it was made in the cask and then they put it into the bottle. So there you're not going to have bittel, because as I said, you don't have 60 against the walls. But if it's blended means they have various whiskey casks and then they blend them. So there you have a shot at least of bittel b'shisha. Okay, now. Let's start with the following. What is going to save us? Right now it seems that if you're getting, unless you have bourbon and you're buying Sama whiskey, it seems to be a Shiloh. Now we have a real Shiloh. Unless you know for a fact that they're not using it in cherry casks. So the beginning of a Heter, and the foundation for a Heter, is found in the Shulchan Aruch. It's in the Yordea, Simon Kuf Lamed Dalad Sifhei. It's in Yordea, Simon Kuf Lamed Dalet Sifhei. The Shulchan Aruch tells us an amazing chiddush. That with wine, even though normally the din is that you need bittel b'shishim, when it comes to wine, wine is bittel b'sheish. You can nullify wine if it's one part wine and six parts water, let's say. Why? Because if you have six parts water and one part wine, it's not wine anymore. It's gone. You know, maybe there's a wine taste in there, but it's not wine. Whatever's been in there is gone. It's totally nullified. So it doesn't have the shame. The shame yain is poka entirely, so it's bottle. So whatever it was went through a total shinui, and it's fine. So now that all I need is one to six, or six to one, so what do you think the barrel is going to do? What are the whiskey against the other six parts whiskey to one part wine in the barrel? What do you think? Yeah. Easily, right? Definitely. So now, we're home free, right? Not so fast. The there's a machlokas aposkim where this din in the Shulchan Aruch applies only to wine being bottled in water, or even with other beverages. Okay, for example, whiskey. Would whiskey mevatel it, or is it only water? So the Ramah is machmir. The Ramah is in Yordeas, in the Kuf Yudalad, Sif Dalad. He says it's only in water. The Shach, similarly, says only in water. And Yordeas in the Kuf Yudalad, Sif Dalad. But the Taz, and the Mogin Avram, and the Prichodosh are all Mekel, and say, no, the Din is not only is a bottle in water, but it's also a bottle in other beverages. And therefore, the whiskey should be mevatelet. That's the Magen Avram, the Taz, and the Prichodosh. This is machlokas. Okay, so how do we pass in there? We'll get to there in a second. So, there's the machlokas there. The problem is, though, that as you raised, basically, there's a din called Milsa Davidi L'Taim. There's a Ramah in Yoredeah, Simen Tzadi Ches, that says that if something is there for taste, it's a milta da avida l'taima, is there to provide taste, then it's eno batal afilu be'elef. Then it's not even nullified in 1,000 parts. Because if it's for taste, then that means it's a powerful tool, it has a powerful presence, and you can't really argue that it's been nullified. So if that's what...
That's the issue with the Renit, right?
Same thing with the Renit. Well, that was it's a minor. But the point, because you're right, but the same principle that it's present. So anyway, what's the reason that they use the wine casks for the whiskey? So some have argued that it's because of taste. So I remember hearing from Rav Schechter saying that he and a group of Rabbonim once went on a field trip to find out the answer to this question. And when they spoke to the managers of these plants, they asked them, "We're just curious about how you make the whiskey. What's the reason, you know, what's the deal with the sherry casks?" They didn't ask any leading questions. They didn't ask the chakira. They just said, "Why do you do it?" They wanted them to answer the question, masiach lefitumo. They wanted them to give an honest and simple answer. So the response that they received from these managers was that people think, said the managers, that we do this for the taste, to provide a taste of wine into the whiskey. He said, but these people are mistaken. He said, the real secret of what we do is that we put the wine, we use the sherry casks because the sherry, it doesn't provide a taste to the whiskey, but rather what does it do? And nullifies the bad taste of the wood. It makes sure that the wood doesn't give a woody taste to the whiskey. So it's not that the wine is providing a taste for the whiskey. It's just it's preempting this bad taste from the wood. So that's not called a milsa David de taima. If you hold like the Magen Avraham Taz and the Prekodesh, we're okay. If you hold like the Ramah and the Shach, that you need that this bittul b'sheish is only by water, we're still a little stuck. There's a little bit of a complication. There's a Rambam in his Perush on Mishnayos in Arla that says that whenever you add something on purpose, you can't be mavatal itself. These are the ingredients that you normally add in, then you can't be mavatal. But again, as we pointed out, in our case, if it's the wine in the barrel, you're not really adding them into the whiskey. It's not part of the ingredient. It's very hard to say that. And moreover, many poskim disagree with that Rambam. So that's out of the way. Rav Moshe Feinstein, though, gives an amazing heter. This is in Yoredeya, Igros Moshe Yoredeya, Chelek Aleph, Simen Samach Beis. We're going to have to stop in a second here. He says, number one, he says that the wine inside the wine barrel, and the walls of the wine barrel, has been washed out and aged and cleaned and dried. He said that wine is called Kiyuha B'Alma, which means it's like acid. It doesn't have any taste anymore. It's not considered food. That's number one. Number two, says Rav Moshe, we paskin like the Magen Avraham and the Taz and the Pri Chodesh. That's what he says. And just to conclude, you guys got to go to Marv, it was known in the Lower East Side of Manhattan that Rav Moshe Feinstein, when you offered him at a Kiddush scotch, it didn't make a difference which scotch, whether it was blended, single malt, he drank it. Okay, so you know, he drank. It's not that he necessarily went out of his way to buy the ones that had a shiloh, but he wouldn't make a big deal about it, and he would drink it. All right, we'll stop here and have an erev tov. Take care. Guys, by the way, I'm thinking for the next year. I'm thinking either about, I mean, we'll get to all these things eventually, but I'm thinking about Kol Isha or Tchelas. Any preferences? Just by show of hands. Show of hands. Who wants the topic to be Kol Isha?